The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, I'm afraid one of your familiars is getting far too familiar with me. The bloody thing came into my room again last night.
Oh, who do the hamster?
No.
Oh, Taboo the turtle?
No.
Oh, not Voodoo the vole. Boo Boo the bandicoot?
It's a cat, madam. And it's much too cuddly for my liking.
Oh, Cuckoo the cat. I should have known. Good evening. Yes, yes, right this way. Follow Mr. Darling right past me and into the reading room, please, everyone. How wonderful to see you all. What a beautiful group of human beings. oh, greetings, Miss Carolyn. Oh, you want to show me something quickly. Away from the others. Well, all right. Please, step into the alcove here with me. Now bear in mind, if some other witch has hexed you with glowing warts or a blue tongue or something, there's little I can do for you. Oh, it's a wee toad. Oh, well, he's no bigger than a minute, Miss Carolyn. You'd like him to be your familiar, but he just won't. Oh my. I'm sad for both of you. Oh, well, please put him back in your cleavage and take your seat. Maybe tonight's reading will be of help to you. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your hopefully helpful host, Miranda Merrick. I see the word must have gotten out in advance about tonight's topic being on that of familiars, as many of you have brought your, let's say, family pets with you. Oh, it's a good thing we're open-minded about such things around here. I mean, try bringing your pygmy goat into the village public library and see how far you get. Now, I'm afraid there's only jet black tea and a tin of Brother Burgess's blood-curdling biscuits on the hospitality tray this evening, as Natasha is away on a hunting expedition. Well, don't all look so shocked. I know she's sleek and demure most of the time, but she also has a rugged, almost vicious side to her that she indulges in from time to time. In any case, she'll be back when she's full of daring hunting stories to tell, no doubt. Let's get to our much-anticipated topic, shall we? The topic of familiars. I wish to declare up front that I've only become agreeable on presenting this subject because, well, so many of you have been so relentlessly requesting it. And not because I have anything to confess, nor do I feel a need to discount any rumors regarding the subject in regards to myself. So there. familiars, as even the most naive amongst you probably know, are considered to be the animal companions of witches. Some people will say there's simply no such thing. Bless them. But yet, everyone who has drawn breath in the past several hundred years or more seems to know something about them. And after tonight, you won't be able to feign any ignorance on the subject, because I intend on filling you in on the facts about familiars. Now, this story is key because it is also the telling of the very first familiars ever claimed to be employed by a supposed witch. It's glorious. As with any delicious subject that rears its pretty head down through history, familiars are unbreakably bound to demons. Which makes the entire story of them a bit nebulous and unclear in places. Ancient Eastern writings speak of those who were in alliance with strictly devils and demons in their natural form. But one of the first mentions of familiars, as we know them, came about a two full centuries before the phenomenon would grab hold and fester in the hearts and minds of Scottish, Irish, and English people. And what a tale it is. Precisely 700 years ago, in 1324, a well-to-do Irish woman named Dame Alice Keitler became the first woman charged with witchcraft in Kilkenny, Ireland. Alice was born wealthy and then married a wealthy man, which wasn't unusual for people to do then or even now. Her marriage to a Mr. Outlaw produced a son, William Outlaw. Then, senior Mr. Outlaw died, and Alice took over his land and business and married well again twice more to men with grown children. Sadly, each new husband eventually perishing under questionable circumstances that were never proven. But Alice always seemed to emerge from each loss a good deal wealthier than she was before. By the time she had married her fourth husband, in addition to being a moneylender now, she also ran a very successful inn and owned impressive amounts of land. She married a fourth time, and when husband number four was struck gravely ill, his adult children joined forces with the adult children of her previous husbands. The children then colluded and concluded that they had all been cheated out of their inheritances by Alice. They didn't credit her with being crafty enough to trick their fathers into signing their wealth and wares over into her name. Oh no. All of the adult children claimed that Alice had cursed their fathers to death with the cunning use of witchcraft. During these times, the crime of witchcraft was still being treated as a misdemeanor. It wasn't taken too seriously, but it was punished by making the guilty pay fines or forcing them into a kind of public penance by working for society or, of course, for the church. But the determined group in pursuit of Alice found a powerful ally who was deeply ensconced within the church, Bishop de la Dread, which sounds like a made-up name, but I promise you it isn't. The bishop pleaded their case, but initially had great difficulty overriding the local government's light touch in dealing with charges of witchcraft. You see, he was seeking to enforce the church's law, which made witchcraft punishable by death. In time, the bold bishop was able to have Alice's son arrested, as well as several of her servants. Alice fled, and while she was on the run, Bishop de la Dred convinced the authorities that the kind of witchcraft that Alice was involved in wasn't just simple games of matchmaking or causing her neighbor's hens to lay green eggs or something. Alice, he claimed, was intimate with evil. He asserted that she was in league with the devil himself and was utilizing demonic forces in order to cause harm to others with the aim of becoming more rich and more powerful, and she needed to be stopped. So Alice Keitler was hunted and soon captured and imprisoned with her staff in the dirty dungeons of Kilkenny Castle. My lovelies, I'll ask you to please brace yourself for this next part, which I will try to soften a bit. The brutal bishop made sure that Alice and her accomplices were charged with the most heinous things he could dream up. He charged her with denying the Christian faith, stealing the keys to her local church, and holding satanic meetings or rituals with her cohorts inside of the church. The imprisoned group was also accused of dismembering animals and then reassembling them as sacrifices at a certain set of crossroads to honor or perhaps summon a mighty demon simply known as Robin, or the son of Artus, which sounds rather endearing to me. Robin. Excuse me. Bishop La Dred convinced the courts that Dame Alice and her co-conspirators had in their possession the skull of a beheaded criminal, in which they cast the gutted entrails of cockerels, worms, and rats to cook up the most foul and potent potions. These concoctions, he declared, were used to make others loose in their morals, or to cause them to become ill and die. The bishop claimed that this sinister coven even conducted their vile magic by collecting the hair and fingernails of the victims whom they bewitched, and somehow the stolen clothing of unbaptized boys in their evil spells. And that's a new one on even me. The all-knowing, virtuous holy man astoundingly stated that he himself had searched the vacant home of the witch Alice's first husband and victim, and that he had found her bedeviled toolkit, being bundles of deadly nightshade, gobs of lowly worms, and the plucked-out eyes of ravens. To further bolster his case against Alice, the bishop seemed to know that all of this masterful controlling and killing was accomplished with the unholy service and aid of familiars. Remember, This is 1324. He told the hungry ears of the court of vengeful demons who appeared and abetted Alice the Witch in the form of common house cats. That creeping demons had hidden their spirited selves inside of a black dog. And that these devils, masquerading as harmless animals, then entered into a pact with the witch, assuring her success in her godless, merciless missions. Oh my. I don't know about you, dear guest, but I could use just a little break. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is happily brought to you by Grimm's Grocers. Perhaps you know of someone, or it could be you, who'd like a little homespun, nourishment of goo. Grimm's Grocers has you covered with fiddles for your friends. You can cram your cupboards with foul and fiendish blends. There's Campbell's Cream of Badger Guts, if your familiar is a bat. There's Oscar Mayer's Liver Cuts, for your demon who's a rat. There's every kind of putrid mix to keep your pals agreeable. You'll find it all down aisle 6, but the smell will be unspeakable. Moldy mousehead rotting cheese with matted hair on top. A skunk heart stuffed with angry bees, soaking in gray slop. Crusty warts and rancid blood all baked into a bread. Open jars of dead man's mud, scraped right off his head. Keep your familiar faithful with Grimm's for goodness sake. Your Hellcat will be grateful for honest devil's food cake. On special this week at Grimm's, Purina Demon Chow, just $6.66 a pound. Buyer beware, no safety sanctioned packaging is available for Grimm's Purina Demon Chow. Please bring your own barrel, bucket, bin, box, bowl, bag, pillowcase, sock, or granny skull to fill. Product sold by weight, not volume. Some settling may occur. Grimm's is not responsible for leaks, drippage, flames, fumes, fine particulates, or chemical burns. Grimm's Grocers, on the corner of Vincent and Price. My, let's give our dear Alice a few moments, shall we? For now, I shall entertain you with a few, let's say, facts about familiars. Again, the very definition by way of Western culture is that a familiar is meant to be a companion, a helper, or assistant to a witch. The very essence of the being is that it is a devil, a demon, or imp that can either inhabit almost any small or diminutive animal. A cat, a toad, a crow, etc. Or that the devil itself possesses the power to shapeshift into said animal, to blend in or look normal to others as it lives in servitude alongside its master, the witch. In past times, these familiars were sometimes described as fantastical creatures, grotesque beings, or chimera-like entities, with perhaps the head of a dog, wings like bats, and having a snake for its tail. How fun. Some historical writings divide familiars into two groups. A divining familiar that the witch does not own, but instead utilizes as she is directed, and domestic familiars which she does own. Now, I know what your next question is, because, well, I know you by now. You would like to know How? How did these witches from long ago actually acquire these wonderful beastly companions, right? Because obviously there was no such shop as Familiars Are Us back then. I mean, there is at the black market, but anyway, it is a good question. The answers are a bit shady, I'm afraid, but here it goes. And you didn't hear this from me, by the way. It is said that in medieval times, there were four known ways for a witch to procure her familiars. Sometimes a familiar was just a gift from one witch to another. How sweet. A witch could also inherit a familiar from a relative or friend. The devil was said at times to simply give a witch one or more familiars. So again, a gift. So that's three ways. The fourth way was through magical incantations, along with taking part in a secret ritual. When a supposed witch moved up in the rankings with her practice and was looking to advance even further with her abilities, well, it was said that she would meet with and show favor and affections with or for an underworld leader or devil. The two would meet and enter into a mutual agreement or pact. Tit for tat, as they used to say. Please bear in mind that this may be misinformation entirely, as it often came from the church. The church that may have been seeking to gain power over or to subjugate women at this time. Please consider also that some women and girls were tortured during their witchcraft trials, and they often broke down and confessed to the most ridiculous and atrocious acts of indecency, in hopes of having their lives spared. It didn't always work. Dominance and control are motivations in society still today. In 1645, a woman known as Mother Lakeland gave her confession, stating that after she had met with the devil and signed a contract of service to him, she was given three familiars, being two dogs and a mole, each capable of doing the appointed works of the devil, when he himself could not be present. And you may have heard of the confessions of the famous Scottish witch Isabel Gowdy, who declared that she had met and romanced the devil and dined with the king and queen of the fairies. Isabel spoke casually of changing into a hare to go unnoticed in the company of those she wished to harm or just keep an eye on, and of being granted the power to fly upon a broom to meet on the Sabbath with the devil and her coven. As a point of historical accuracy, I wish to point out that it actually happened in the 1600s that one man took it upon himself to travel the English countryside, hunting down and dragging to justice witches. He even christened himself Witchfinder General, like some sort of army. One Matthew Hopkins went so far as to cite the proof of an animal as certainly being a familiar was that if the animal had an unusual name, Perhaps you yourself have seen the old-timey woodcut of the witchfinder General Hopkins, who appears to have suddenly entered the house of two witches wearing long dresses and bonnets, who are surrounded by their familiars that are conveniently telling him the names of them in the cartoonish print. Some of the animals are Pie-Wacket, Grizzle Greedy Gut, Sack and Sugar, and Vinegar Tom. It may also have occurred to you to contemplate the feeding and keeping of familiars. Surely these complex magical beings were in need of some special care and sustenance. Other than shopping at Grimm's, it is documented that witches were instructed to keep their domestic familiars that they owned in a box or chest, or in an impossibly large black cast iron tea kettle, I've read, which was to be placed upon a soft bed of fine wool. I can't say why that is. But the feeding of the familiars. Now, this was a special directive as well. According to the Scotch lawyer Forbes, who apparently tried so many accused witches that he personally could avow that witches fed their familiars three things: bread and milk and blood. Forbes professed that a witch would typically prick her flesh and let the droplets of her blood fall into the open mouth of her familiar so as to feed it in this manner. However, something quite ugly and ambiguous grew out of this concocted way of thinking. It soon became espoused that witches had somewhere upon their bodies a supernumerary mark, a lesion, a bump, a mole, a wart, or even a callus from working, and that this mark, whatever it was actually an extra nipple put upon her for the explicit purpose of feeding her familiars. Now, a survey. Who among us has one, if not more, of these common anomalies? Please raise your hand. I'll raise mine. See the problem? I have 13, but who's counting? Now that you know how to get and care for a familiar, now that you know how this was done, or totally wasn't, whichever you believe, let me tell you what became of our friend, Dame Alice Keitler, and her companions. During the hearing for the charges leveled against Alice, the prosecution announced that they knew these supposed facts about her: that she had engaged in carnal acts with the devil in order to gain favor with him, and to be granted powers over people, animals, and their fate, with the help of demonic familiars that were either given to her or were under her command. It is also alleged that she used her powers of witchcraft to kill her husbands and to put a spell over others, making them willing to blindly turn their wealth over to her, and that her current husband was suffering under a forceful spell of witchcraft presently that was steadily, slowly murdering him. Alice vigorously denied all of these charges. Her money, position, and power as a landowner and minor aristocrat coming to her aid, she couldn't be tortured into confessing like a common person would have been. So the courts and the church tortured her servant, Petronella, who crumbled immediately after a brief bout of agonizing torment. Poor Petronella sang like a very frightened canary. She not only affirmed the bishop's accusations, she also added to them, claiming that she witnessed Alice calling forth the devil and lesser demons and made her bond with them by committing lascivious acts. She told of aiding her mistress and her son, William Outlaw, too, in the making of persuasive potions, poisons, and powders that caused others to behave unnaturally, against their god, or to love or harm others, as Alice directed. There's a long, detailed list of cursed ingredients like spiders, worms, intestines, and even the exhumed corpse of a youngster that I don't want to go into great detail of here. But suffice it to say, Petronella's gory testimony sank Alice and her adult son both at once. Several fascinating things happened after this turn of fate. Petronella was fully charged and received no mercy from the court. Seeing this, William Outlaw instantly confessed and begged for forgiveness. Nude in front of Bishop de la Dred, he pleaded for mercy, which he did receive, and was made to attend Mass 3 times each day. He had to feed the poor and work without pay repairing the local chapel. Petronella had a different fate entirely. She was chased by the bishop, who ruthlessly flogged her, driving her through 6 parishes. She was made to confess her transgressions publicly before all of the townspeople and the body of the clergy. After doing this, she was consumed in the flames, but not before cursing the town and vowing revenge. It all seems a little unfair to me. As for our Alice, the witch at the center of all the wicked workings, supposedly. Whilst one night lying in the dark dungeon of Kilkenny Castle, awaiting her fate, her guards were mysteriously overtaken and badly beaten, and Alice escaped and was never, ever seen again. No record of her, no word, no body, no grave, no nothing. She simply vanished. Some say she went to England. But we happen to have a simple leather-bound manuscript here, written in broken medieval text on crumbling vellum. It's barely legible, but it clearly alludes to the proposal that Dame Alice Keitler was one of the very first and most powerful true witches, and that she was granted immortality. The faded ink attests that because of her dedication and sacrifices, that she would live on, teaching those who came after her, instating new witches, and gifting familiars to those who pleased her from thenceforth. Oh my, Miss Carolyn, your toad baby! Oh, everyone please, don't jump up or try to dash out. We don't want anyone to trot on Carolyn's froggy friend. He could be very important. All pets are, aren't they? Oh, he's so tiny. Please be careful. There we are. Everyone, step carefully and do point him out or hand him over to Ms. Carolyn for, safekeeping. There we go. Please file out carefully. Easy now. There we go. Good night, my dear guests. Good night. Are we all set for midnight tea with Dame Alice, darling? I know she'll be so pleased to meet you.
Madam, she's 700 years old. We'll have nothing in common. I think I'll dismiss myself.
Oh, well, she was the first witch to ever have a shape-shifting wolf companion.
That's marginally interesting.
Oh, she's currently working on a spell to turn humans into jerky in teriyaki, barbecue, and El Diablo flavors.
Ah, just let me change into a nicer jacket.
The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. The magical music and sound design you hear is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. All of our readings are written and produced by me, Miranda Merrick. My favorite thing is sharing them with you. If you have found joy and terror by visiting our unique library, I invite you to join me beyond the cordoned off areas in our also unique Patreon. I solemnly swear on a stack of ancient grimoires that I will personally greet you there, and that you can reach me anytime you care to write. Our patrons get everything first. Visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. If Patreon doesn't give you shivers, please find lots of strange goodies and buy us a bag of entrails in our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/midnightlibrarypod. Be sure to put pod on the end or you'll land on a boring copycat. If you already support the Midnight Library, well, you already know how much we love you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.